What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Progressive Gentleman Podcast. As always, we're your hosts. I'm Dan.
I'm Matt.
And thank you for taking the time to nerd out about music with us. We're back again. Not as long of a break this time around.
Yeah. Hopefully, we'll be consistently back into a somewhat normal cadence of releases.
Absolutely. I mean, we obviously don't want to take those giant breaks. We wish we had more time to do this weekly, really. I mean, this is something that we both enjoy. And speaking of enjoying, you know, what we do here, this one was a fun one for us to prepare for. So this episode is going to be an artist spotlight. We're going to focus on the band Tesseract. One of our favorite bands, dropped a record that's probably going to be in our top 10 at the end of the year easily.
I think that's
easy work for this record. And most of our listener base probably already knows who this band is. So for those of you who do know this band, you know, listen along. Maybe we'll have a couple hot takes on the way, who knows, just to ruffle some feathers. But you know, for the people who kind of follow us to discover new music and you know, just hear us sort of talk about bands that maybe they're not as familiar with. Tesseract is a prog metal band, could be considered prog rock, arguably one of the godfathers of djent. And this is the Progressive Gentleman Podcast. So
definitely, it's only necessary to talk about them.
Definitely fits the subject matter. These guys are from the UK. They're currently touring the US. Even when this episode drops, I believe they'll still be kind of in the middle of that tour. Touring with Intervals and Alluvial. Excellent lineup. I just caught it not that long ago, and the set list was incredible. So would highly recommend checking that out if they're coming through your town.
But so bummed I didn't get to catch it.
I know. I'm not trying to rub it in either, but I am a little bit. You should have been there. who needs finals, bro? Who needs that stuff? School's overrated.
School's for fools.
But overall, our aim with this episode is going to, you know, be to take a bit of a dive into Tesseract's discography, maybe discuss some of the lineup changes along the way, progression of their sound. And like I said earlier, maybe throw in a couple hot takes just to see how that goes. But just a little bit of background. So the founding member was Akil Kaney. He's the lead guitarist. And one thing I think that's cool about this band that we were talking about before we jumped on here is that instrumentally, since their first record, they've had zero turnover. Like, it's been the same guitarist, same bass player, same drummer since the beginning.
That's impressive.
And they have five full length records. So, I mean, it's tough.
Their records span a long time. So it's crazy that they've been like touring and writing records and stuff. And not one person, like, as far as the instrumental side of things.
Yeah. It's always been Akil on lead, James at rhythm, Jay on drums, Amos on bass. The only thing that they have had some turnover on, which if you know the band, you know this. If not, or you might not even know all of this, but they've had a good bit of turnover at the vocalist position. Even though they only have two vocalists, like, total on any of their actual full length recordings, which is wild. I think they've had five vocalists total. When they first started out, like I said, this was sort of the brainchild of Akil, who reached out to a guy named Julien Perrier from France. From what I gather, he just kind of did like some early vocal demo work, just sort of coming up, conceptualizing sort of this idea that became Tesseract. But logistically, that didn't work out, so he wasn't able to be in the band full time, which led to the addition of a vocalist called Abisola Abasanya, who's usually credited as like the first official vocalist.
It's such a cool name.
It is a sweet name. And I think they did a 3-song demo with him, which were like early iterations of songs that would eventually become fully conceptualized into tracks that were on the first full length record, which it's super hard to find these recordings.
Challenge accepted.
Yeah. But, They did some touring with these songs. Ultimately, though, he left in 2009 and was replaced by a guy that some of you may have heard of. I'm not sure. His name is Daniel Tompkins.
Once or twice.
He's kind of all over the place there in the prog metal space. And that's what led to the Concealing Fates EP, which then ultimately became the One record, which was their first record. Which is where we'll start officially with this discography discussion.
The whole figuring out like the EPs that then like mostly became the LPs, and then they've done like live like sort of reimagining things, was like so confusing. And admittedly, like, while I love Altered State and it's one of my favorite albums, like, there are other ones I hadn't had as much experience with. So even just like starting this, like, where do I begin? Like, I felt like I was looking like I'm diving into like the Star Wars universe of like, all right, where do I begin on the timeline with their albums?
And honestly, I think it's that way for a lot of people, right? I mean, I know, you know, just being a part of the scene, how much attention Altered State gets, and, you know, understandably so, that record's amazing. But I feel like a lot of people who sort of came into the Tesseract universe late go back and listen to Altered State and then sort of progress forward from there. And I feel like One gets sort of ignored, or just forgotten about, which is why I would say that it's probably like their most underrated record. It's probably the hidden gem of their discography in a way.
Yeah, I would agree with that, because I had never listened to it, and listening through it this time was like, wow, this is so good. Why does no one talk about this record? Why did I not even know it existed?
Right. Yeah, and I mean, it's got that djenty sound. It's got that mix of harsh and clean vocals, and I feel like if you're a fan of their newest record, War of Being, I almost think that's like you could call that record two. You know what I mean? Because like in my opinion, it's a rebirth of the original sound on One in many ways. It's sort of their first visit back to, you know, the level of mixing of harsh and clean vocals, because Altered State, there's none. And then Polaris, I don't know if there are any. Sonder, there's like a little bit on like King and maybe one other track. Like, this is really like the first dive back into that mix. And just in my opinion, this is kind of Tesseract's best sound. While I don't believe this is their best record, I kind of think this iteration of Tesseract is their best sound, which is why I think I like War of Being as much as I do. Because it sort of was like a, because I started listening to Tesseract in, you know, around 2011 with this record, One. So it was kind of like a blast from the past kind of thing, hearing Daniel Tompkins sort of go back to that style, which everybody knew he was capable of, because, I mean, listen to the record One. But then when Polaris came out, and we'll talk about that when we talk about Polaris, but when Polaris came out, it seemed like he was going in a different direction. And he has that White Moth, Black Butterfly side project, which is a very poppy, sort of project.
It's like also kind of like electronic stuff too, right? Like,
yeah, synth-y. In a way. Yeah. Yeah. So. So I think this is their best sound. And another thing I like about this record, and just prog records in general, is I love when bands do like a suite of songs. You know, like,
yeah,
Coheed's Willing Wells, or like Mars Volta's like Cassandra Gemini off of Francis the Mute, or how Spirit Box has the Mara Effect. I'm sure there's more. I'm just naming the ones that popped into my brain here.
Yeah.
So on this record, they have one called Concealing Fate, which they actually released as an EP, just those six songs. That was like the first recorded thing that they did with Daniel Tompkins. And just, I love like this type of stuff in prog because it just flows as like one fully conceptualized piece of art across like multiple songs. Like I love when bands do that.
Yeah, it's really cool. Like it feels like a graphic novel kind of thing. It's like all like it's almost like a sub album within a greater album. And it's just like it's cool like seeing the like how they flow from one to the next. And just like I mean, those songs in that suite of are all like really, really good songs too.
Oh yeah.
It definitely has that like early Periphery, like very like kind of like early 2000 gent sound to it. That, you know, like when listening to it, I was like, oh, this sounds like early Periphery kind of like from an instrumentation standpoint. Obviously, like the vocals are very different, but I was digging it. And it's like, I mean, I think it could use like a modern sort of like remaster kind of like remixing, but I still think like considering, you know, the age of the album is like, it still sounds really good. And it just like, I can't believe I've never heard anyone like really talk about this album.
Yeah, honestly. I don't know. I guess because this is the album that I discovered Tesseract with, that like the remixing, remastering part for me is like not a necessary thing. Cause I was like, oh, that's, I just, you know, it's the same sound that I know and love. But I would almost say that War of Being in a way is like a more modern remixing, remastering of like that sound in a way.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, so amazing record. My favorite tracks, I don't know if we want to dig into that, but like Acceptance, Deception, like that's the Concealing Fate part one, part two, and then Lament is like a sick opening track for a record. So those are probably like my top three tracks on that record.
Yeah, I really like Acceptance and Deception. Also, Lament is good too, but Eden is a cool track, like a cool way to end that album. And I know like this isn't a studio album and we were kind of like, you know, mention it sort of in passing, but like the next album being the Elliot Coleman EP where they did like some rediscovered ones, the Eden 2.0 is kind of cool. I don't like it as much as the Daniel Tompkins version, but it's like a neat little.
Well, let's touch on that briefly. So Daniel Tompkins ends up leaving the band after releasing One, and Elliot Coleman, who you may be familiar with as the singer of Good Tiger,
filled in,
and he's mostly a touring vocalist for them while they were sort of trying to figure themselves out. But he did end up recording an EP called the Perspective EP, which is mostly like an acoustic record or an acoustic EP of songs off of One. But then he did like the Eden 2.0. And then also had an original song called Dream Brother, which is by far my least favorite Tesseract song. I don't even like view it as canon. So I just usually skip right past that, but some people might like it. So if you're a big Elliot Coleman fan, definitely check that out. I mean, I love acoustic versions of songs too, and some of them are done well, so I'm not going to like fully shit on that EP, but if you've been listening long enough, you know that I'm not a big fan of Good Tiger or Elliot Coleman. Well, I like some of their stuff. That's not fair to say, but his vocals kind of just, I'm just not a big fan of, so.
I really like them, but I kind of wish that this existed, but like as a sidebar project, like that Elliot and Tesseract would have like both like combined to do like a side project, but still like Tesseract with Daniel Tompkins exists and Elliot Coleman doing Good Tiger kind of thing. But yeah. I wouldn't want them to have continued with this trajectory. I don't think, like, just, you know, Daniel never rejoining and stuff.
Spoiler alert. but so while they're trying to figure themselves out, they stumble upon a vocalist named Ash O'Hara. And they write a record called Altered State, which is the beginning and the end of the Ash O'Hara era. With Tesseract.
What a good run it was.
It was, because goddamn. But yeah, Ash took over the reins for this next full-length project, Altered State. Also the vocalist of a band called Voices from the Fuselage. If you've never checked them out, definitely check that out, especially if you're a fan of Altered State. Or if you've never listened to Altered State, you go listen to it and you're like, I wish there was more like this. Go check out Voices from the Fuselage. It's not the same, but it's close enough. but yeah, so Altered State, for me, this is the pinnacle of their discography. I know I mentioned The Sound on One and then ultimately The Sound on War of being sort of my favorite version of Tesseract as far as their like sound goes. But there's something about Altered State as a collective or like as a piece of art that just is superior just as a collection of music. I just mentioned with the last record how I like suites of songs on records. This has four of them. and Of Matter, Of Mind, Of Reality, and Of Energy. And just the way this entire record flows as one piece of music. I mean, we've mentioned how, like, I love how Between the Buried and Me does that shit. I love just when a band does that, and yet your songs can still stand on their own. For example, I just saw Tesseract. I said we, sorry, I'm rubbing it in again. I just saw Tesseract and they played Nocturne. And just as a standalone track, like, it sounds great, but in the concept of the record, how Resist flows into it and then how Nocturne flows into Exile is incredible. Just how everything in this record flows together is incredible. So it's like the way that everything flows together, the emotion in the songs, like, I don't know if that's just all on Ash or if just collectively as a, I mean, just the, how tight the instrumentals are, just everything about this record.
Yeah, the mood of the album, like, I think the instrumentation and the vocals together lend, and like, there's just like, there's a lot of like, I don't know, it's like intangible, but like while you're listening to it, it's like, I can feel the energy that they, you know, the blood, sweat, and tears that they put into this.
Yeah, when I listen to it, I'm just like, I can feel. That's like, that's where I stick, 'cause it's just, it's incredible. It's just so good. I joke about this all the time, but like for Christmas, the one year, my mom got my wife and I, like gift cards to do this, like sensory deprivation, like float tank thing. I still haven't done this yet, but I'm 100% going to,
did you do the sensory deprivation tank?
No, not yet.
I'm curious how those are. I would like to try one.
Yeah. So you have an option, right? So you can have like, no lights or lights, and then like no sound or sound, and some people choose to do like music, some people choose to do like nature sounds, whatever, rain, whatever you want to do. For me, I'm gonna do fucking pitch black and just jam to Altered State,
do some mushrooms beforehand.
at least take a couple gummies or something before I go do this, but something's gonna happen.
That would be like, just, I mean, with no drugs involved, that would probably be like a crazy experience, just like floating in a tank of, you know, and with the lights off, just be like vast nothingness feeling. Yeah. And listening to that album, that would be a weird but probably also cool experience.
I feel like it's gonna be life-changing. I don't know, maybe it'll suck, but Tim, in my brain, I can't think of a better like idea than that for this sensory deprivation tank thing.
It's the only way to take this album to a different level, to yes. make it better than it already is.
Yes. But yeah, I mean, this record is just incredible. There's also like one of my, I'm not a big like live, like I love seeing music live. So I'm wording this wrong. Like live recordings, like I'm not a big fan of that usually.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know what you mean.
But they have a video series on YouTube where they do Altered State, like back-to-back, you know, songs back-to-back, at least the Of Matter suite. It's like live at Sphere Studios. It's incredible to see how flawlessly, instrumentally and vocally, that like live take, like it's crazy how like flawless they do those songs. And see another,
I'll have to check that. I've not watched that.
Oh, dude, it's worth it. It's so worth it. And first hot take, watching Daniel Tompkins do Nocturne, a couple weekends ago, or whenever the fuck I saw them.
That was last week.
It probably was. I was like actually surprised that he didn't even attempt to hit some of the notes. I know that he can, but maybe it's just like the arrangement or something like that. He has a completely different arrangement for Nocturne than Ash does. And he doesn't go as high vocally with as much power as Ash did. And I don't know if that's because he's not as connected to the song as Ash is or was. But hot take, I think Ash does these songs better. And maybe that's not a hot take. Maybe that's like something that's to be expected. But
yeah, I feel like since he was the one that like was involved with like the recording and writing process, he's, you know, more rooted in the songs. I am surprised though that he didn't like, that Daniel didn't go for it.
Right.
Like he's obviously got the vocal range.
I was going to say he's got the range. So it was interesting. And I don't know if it's just because how it was arranged that like going from one note to the other is like too difficult for him that he had to like change the arrangement. I don't know. Or if it's just like he wanted to make it his own, which is also fine. I mean, either way, it's fine. Daniel Tompkins, I'm by no means saying that he's not like an incredible vocalist, because he's between him and like Andy from Monuments and like some of my favorite sort of like clean vocalists in prog, you know, Daniel Tompkins is at the top of the list. So I'm definitely not trying to call him out here. I'm just saying it was interesting for me to see that. I almost expected him to try to go crazier with it as like a, no, I should be the one, you know, oh, this is your favorite record, watch how I just crush it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was interesting to see sort of a more reserved take on
it. Yeah, that is surprising, especially because it seems like he's like really excited about like with this tour, like the videos that I've seen, he's like really gets into it and like kind of sort of like feels like he's engaging the crowd a lot and you would think that he would be like, I'm going for it. And just get, like, feel that hype and just like belt it out.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that is kind of surprising.
Yeah. But I mean, overall, I'm glad that Daniel Tompkins is back, because like I said, One was my favorite version of Tesseract, and War of Being to me is like, I mean, I'll keep saying it, is super close to that sound. So overall, I'm glad he's back, but this is still, I mean, this record, Altered State, is like on like my Mount Rushmore of like gent albums or prog metal albums. and don't ask me what else is on there, because I did not plan for that question. but I know for a fact this one is, you know, this is like a desert island record for me.
Yeah. As it should be, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. But moving on from Altered State. So Ash leaves to make way for Daniel Tompkins to return.
Wow.
Sorry for the spoilers earlier.
and so he comes back and they tour a little bit, and then they release a record called Polaris, which,
not to be confused with the band.
Correct. Not to be confused with the band. Which for me, I was excited kind of to see him return, but like it was mixed emotions, right? Because of how much I loved Altered State. that, you know, seeing Ash only do one record and then leave. And I think he left just because Daniel Tompkins was like, I'm ready to come back kind of thing. Like, I don't think it was a,
like, it wasn't like on bad terms or anything.
Right. Yeah. I don't think it was on bad terms or anything to my knowledge. I don't know, like, sort of the ins and outs of that type of stuff. I wasn't really like, I loved the music, but I wasn't like podcaster journalist level shit back then. I was just like, oh, Daniel Tompkins is back. I don't know how to feel about this. And I know like a lot of people who love Tesseract were like really excited that he was back. Like there was like a hashtag like Daniel is better act or some shit that was going around back then that Like there's some, I like briefly remember that. And then the record dropped and to me, it was Daniel Tompkins' best attempt to recreate the magic in a bottle that was Altered State. The harsh vocals that you were used to on one, like that version of Tesseract, were gone. And it was a lot more of the like emotional, like, you know, stuff that really was cultivated well on Altered State. And I don't know if that was intentional. Like, I don't know if he approached it as like, let's sort of ease into this kind of thing. Because you do see a progression, right, from Polaris to War of Being, where they progressively get back to that sound on one.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's intentional or if it's just, this is just the record they wanted to write.
It is funny because it's like, it went like heavy, less heavy, less heavy. And then it was kind of like, and revert.
Right. And yeah. Like, it's like a slow ramp up back to where they started. It's
yeah. I wonder that too, if it was like, all right, we ventured out and did the more like ambient, softer stuff. And like, now let's go back to the crazy, frantic, heavier stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely something that I've been intrigued by.
The next album is just going to be like full blown, like car bomb level.
I kind of honestly think that like they're back to their sound and like, that's where they're going to stay. You know what I mean? But, who knows what'll happen. That's hard to predict. And it seems like, I mean, we can talk about that more when we get to War of Being, but it does seem like they've found sort of a concept that they're going to live in for a while. Like, that's kind of what I'm interpreting this War of Being sort of universe as. You know, they keep making posts as, like, the scribe. You know, there's definitely a concept sort of rooted in this the newest record.
I think they even, like, wiped their Instagram before they, like, started doing stuff for this. So it seems like they are, like, their band is, like, clean slate. We're starting here, and they, like you said, they're doing that stuff with the scribe, and it seems like, you know, they build a video game around it. So like they really want to build this world, and I can't imagine that they would do, like, he would have spent all the time to build a video game for one album and then just like forget about it.
And there's more to touch on that too, but I think we should save that for when we talk about War of Being. So so Polaris, like I said, I do think it's sort of a continuation of the sound from Altered State, sort of the more mellowed down sound, obviously still with some, you know, heavier instrumentals, but just from a vocal performance perspective, I feel like it was almost Daniel trying to mirror what Ash achieved on Altered State, which it worked, but like not to the level of Altered State, mostly because I don't think this record flows as well as Altered State did. I think this is sort of a more disconnected, like each song is sort of individual, which there's nothing wrong with that. But I think as a person who likes, you know, suites of songs and, you know, records that flow.
Yeah.
I found it sort of lacking, for me in that regard, but like vocal performance, I mean, Daniel Tompkins is incredible. Some of the vocal runs, like Seven Names is a closing song. Like there's a vocal run in that song that's just incredible to me. In fact, we were just talking about it before this episode, but they just posted on their Instagram, someone doing a cover of that particular part of that song. It just gives you goosebumps. It's just really good. Tourniquet's an incredible song. Hexes is a great song. Survival's a great song. Cages is a great song.
Utopia's got like a really cool like bass riff in.
Yes. In there. Oh yeah. Oh, I was gonna like do it with my mouth, but I'll just end up ruining this episode. yes. No, that is cool, and like that like picks up at the end there, and you're like, oh yeah, that's good. I love that.
Yeah.
Song. But for me, this record is probably sitting at the bottom of their discography. If I were to rank their discography, that being said, it's still like a B record. You know what I mean? Like it's not a record that I would say like, oh, that's terrible. Like they don't have a bad record. This just happens to be the least, impactful record of their discography for me personally.
Yeah. I think the nature, it doesn't feel like, I mean, I haven't listened to it enough times to like know whether there is a concept to it. This is admittedly like kind of a hole, like a gap in my Tesseract knowledge. I mean, I've obviously listened to it a few times, but especially like to prepare for the episode. But it does feel, like you said earlier, that it's not like each track stands on its own. So it feels less concept album-y than the other ones do. And I think that as far as like prog goes, kind of is like a detractor for me, because I also love that kind of like cohesive story, one song flowing into the next. And this one doesn't do that. So,
which like from a story perspective, I'm not sure any record up until War of Being for them had like a like story concept. But like from what you're saying, like conception, you know, concepts aren't always lyrical concepts or story concepts. Like sometimes, you know, musical concepts, instrumental concepts, just the ability for one song to flow into the other. Like that's something that's huge in prog, even more than just like having a underlying story to your record, which they do seem to be exploring with War of Being. But this just seemed like a collection of, you know, just a collection of songs, which is cool. Again, I mean, that is what music is a collection of songs. It's just, I like when
they feel cohesive.
Yeah, and it feels cohesive pieces of music.
It feels like there's more, like more thought put into it when it's like, well, we know like we're writing this and we're writing this song to flow into this song. And how can we make that happen? And it feels like there's more effort put into it to make it that way. When they're like separate songs, it feels like not lazy by any means, because this album is great, but I just like, it feels like there's not as much like love put into the album as when you compare it to like Altered State.
It can feel a little like disjointed at times, which there's nothing wrong with. Again, it's nothing wrong with that. There are some amazing songs on this record.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's worth mentioning too, they did put out a sort of like a reimagined version of this record too, called Arai. Errai, I think that's how you'd pronounce that.
Sounds right to me.
And I mean, some of the Arai versions, Seven Names in particular, because like I said, I love that vocal run in that song, and it's even cooler, I think, in the Arai version. Some of those versions are very, very well done. So I think it's only four tracks, but it's very worth checking out, especially if you like this record, or if you just like Tesseract, just listen to all their records and check this out. But that is Polaris, and fortunately, Daniel Tompkins stays with the band, and they release their next full length, which to me is bullshit to call it a full length record.
is that a hot take? Is that?
I don't know if it's a hot take. It might be a hot take. It was like 28 minutes or something. Like, I just wanted more, you know? So they released a record in 2018 called Sonder. Also, one of the most disappointing pre-orders I've ever gotten in my life. I pre-ordered this record and it came with like a shirt, and the shirt looked like it was going to be like the cool blend of like blue and red and purple that like is on the color palette for the cover of the record.
Yeah.
And I got it. And it was like all blue with like what looked like a I'm going to keep this PG. It looks like a bleach stain, like on the shoulder. yeah, it was that shirt was awful. but that's all I'll complain about on that regard.
That's disappointing.
It was disappointing.
Because that album cover's cool. So like a shirt that has that like sort of tie-dye effect to it. Yeah, and
it has that logo, that like the Sonder logo on the back too. Like if it was just the color of the album cover, like it would have been a really cool shirt.
And yeah.
It ended up sucking real bad. But
that's a bummer.
But what are you gonna do? But anyway, so Sonder comes out. and I mean, like I kind of said or hinted at previously, you know, between Polaris and War of Being, they sort of slowly started to ramp up back to like a modern version of the sound off of One. And a song like King, I think, is very much like evidence of that. It's the first time that they go back to any type of harsh vocal since One. So, you know, two full length records had passed since they had done that. So, I mean, just dropped several bangers. I mean, there's only seven tracks on this record, and Luminary's a banger, King's a banger, Juno's a banger, Smile's a banger. The Arrow is arguably a banger. Orbital for me, it's only 2 minutes long, but it's like, it gives me similar goosebumps that, Seven Names off of Polaris, like that vocal run there, like just it gets you in your feels a little bit, which is why I love Altered State. So that's why I like this track on yeah. Sonder. But then they have like a track that's like 11 and a half minutes long that they should have just made two tracks, because it's not you could literally physically separate this song into two songs.
Yeah, it's
Beneath My Skin, Mirror Image. Like, just make it two songs. Like, there was no reason that needed mashed together. but it's probably, in my opinion, I think I like half of it. But as a collective, it's probably the weakest track on the record.
Yeah, that one's like kind of like forgettable for me. But like you said, like all the other ones, they're very solid. Like Luminary is really good. Juno's really good, and then I really like King too. Like, it is a very solid album, but it's just short.
Orbital into Juno. Like, I used to just listen to those two songs back to back all the time. Cause like,
yeah,
that as an intro into Juno, like how we mentioned, I mean, this record again, isn't necessarily like a cohesive, like it doesn't flow perfectly. But Orbital flows into Juno really well. And that's probably my favorite sort of track combination on the record. But yeah, this is very much the beginning of the return fully to like Daniel Tompkins' version of Tesseract. I just wish it was more than 28 minutes long or whatever it is. It's something like that. But it's short. It's too damn short.
Too damn short. Actually, it says it's 36, which is still short. Yeah. Like usually, usually a full length is like 40 minutes or more. And even 40 is like pretty short for a full length.
And you figure like, okay, so 36 minutes, 11 and a half of that is the worst song on the record.
Yeah, so it does feel even shorter because you kind of like don't want to like that's not the song that you're in it for,
right? And like, and then two of the other tracks are less than 3 minutes long, or like 2.5 minutes long or less.
Yeah.
Luminary is only 3 minutes long.
Yeah, they should have made Luminary 11 minutes long.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it just feels short, and maybe it feels shorter because that 11 minute song is like not one that I'm a huge fan of, but it leaves you wanting more, which I don't know if that's by design or if they were just like feeling pressure to get a record out.
Yeah, it kind of like, it reminds me of like the Contortionists, like most recent.
Our Bones.
Yeah. Like the EP is so good, but it's so short, and it's like, like, I want more. Make this a full length.
Yeah.
And I know this is technically a full length, but come on, guys, you know. You right. know it wasn't. You know what you did.
Right. It just felt shorter than even I guess it was, and that's never a good thing, but...
I mean, I guess it's like, you know, it leaves us wanting more, and obviously, like, you enjoyed it, and you were just like, give me more, so... Yeah. I guess it's like a good problem to have, but
yeah, I mean, I was happy with the sort of the tone of the record, the way the record sort of, you know, just the overall sound on the record. I was happy with that. I liked it a lot better than Polaris. I just, just wanted more. And it sucked that we had to wait 5 more years for their next full length, which, yeah. Just dropped this year, War of Being. Let's fucking talk about it, eh?
Let's go.
So it starts off with an absolute bang. Natural Disaster, like, oh wow, harsh vocals are back. You know what I mean? Like, it was like,
right.
And we had seen songs being teased, and I think War of Being, like, I think the title track was the one that was being played live, like over in Europe or whatever, whenever they were playing festivals and stuff. And there were like some short clips, like real shitty quality clips of them playing this song where Daniel Tompkins is screaming. And we're like, oh shit, they're going to bring heavy music back. But we didn't know because we had no singles. We just had these little shitty iPhone clips.
Yeah, from like people in the fucking
mezzanine. Yeah, just like filming on their potato phone. Like, so like we could tell he was screaming. We had no idea other than that what it was going to sound like. So. But there was like hope, like there was hype around it, like, oh shit, like we're coming back to heavy Tesseract.
Yeah.
And then you play the first track on this record and you're, War of Being was the first single, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which had heavy parts. So you were like, yes. And he even like experimented with different, like lower growls. Like,
yeah, I feel like this album does a lot of experimentation with vocals. Like, they go back to one, but he also like tries some different stuff. Like there's some different like gravelly, you know, like kind of sort of clean, sort of not, like in between sounds. And I don't know if that's like vocal layering or if he's doing some like weird stuff with his throat, but he's like definitely trying new things.
Yeah, and I mean, I saw them play War of Being live, and I mean, unless they were very well recorded backtracks, which could be the case, because there were a lot of recorded backtracks. Layering is a very big thing. Vocal layering is a very big thing for their sound, to sort of build the soundscapes that they do. You know, with Djent, and this is not a knock on the instrumentals, but with Djent, the instrumentals aren't necessarily overly complex. There's a lot of layering there as well. And with Tesseract in general, the vocal is the lead.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like when they're layering, like that's why they layer vocals as much in all the harmonies and stuff. It's one vocalist. So they need, you know, backtracks for that kind of stuff. But where I'm going with this was, as long as that wasn't a very well-placed backtrack, he was hitting, you know, he was doing those screams pretty well in person. So, doing them well live. So the experimenting with different sort of harsh vocal styles is definitely evident. Some more like hardcore type vocal styles, some more like lower like vocal styles that you hear specifically in War of Being. I think the more hardcore type screams, like in Legion, I think like there's a little bit of that.
Yeah.
He does his usual super high pitched stuff too, which his clean vocal range is just unmatched, even though he couldn't hit those Ash vocals, but I'm not going to talk about that anymore. But but yeah, I mean, this is what Tesseract is supposed to sound like on this record, in my opinion, which has me super hyped. I mean, Natural Disaster, incredible song. Echoes, great song. The Gray, great song. Legion, great song. War of Being, great song. Sacrifice is cool. Sirens is cool. Like, I mean, there are some songs that sort of stray from that, like, heavy sort of, you know, the tone that was set early on doesn't necessarily go throughout, but like,
yeah,
I think that's by design, especially since there is an underlying concept. I'm sure there's reasons behind that, but
yeah,
overall, it's an incredible record.
Yeah, I think the one for me that like I don't like Tender, like I don't know what it is about that song, but it just like really doesn't do a lot for me. I mean, I think collectively the album is fantastic, and like you just listed, you know, the majority of the tracks on the album are really good. It's just like that one song just kind of like takes me out of it, and it's kind of like with Sleep Token, the like, do you wish that you love me, and it's like,
yeah,
it's kind of like that track of like, does this really need to be on here? And I'm sure like other people are probably like, are you insane? That song is so good. But I don't know. For me, it just was like, I could kind of like do with a different, like throw something else that's 4.5 minutes in here that's not this track.
Yeah, for me, it kind of is like a palate cleanser between Legion and War of Being. Like it sort of leads into that like, that opening riff for War of Being a little bit. While I don't think it's like a strong track on the record, I think it has its place.
Cleanser.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wish there was like a little more going on in the song. Like not that it necessarily has to have like, you know, like screaming vocals or anything, but it felt like, it was too much of a palate cleanser. There was like Legion has some like pretty heavy stuff in it. And then it goes to Tender that kind of like very, very timid. And then it goes back to War of Being, which is heavy again. And it's kind of like, I feel like you need to have like a few little like spikes of something in there of like emotion to keep it going. Cause I feel like listening to it, to me, I felt like Legion's like, oh, it gets me all excited, and then Tender kind of like takes me out of it, and then I'm supposed to be like back in it again for War of Being, and it almost like makes me feel like it takes a second to get into War of Being because it was like, Tender kind of took me out of it. Maybe that's just me though, and like my headspace currently. I know sometimes like that happens where like just where I am in the time and place of listening to it. It's like, if I come back to it, like a couple months later, I'm like, oh, I dig this song actually. So maybe I'll come around to it in a little while. But currently that's my stance, is Tender is the weakest song on this album.
Yeah. No,
which I mean, it's still like a damn good album. So if that's the weakest song, then it's still a good song, but.
And there's just, it's, you know, unlike Sonder, even though unlike Sonder, the 11-minute song might be the strongest song on this record. You know what I mean? Like War of Being is, in my opinion, probably the strongest track on the record. I always view records as like, you know, of the, you know, 60 minutes, how many minutes did I enjoy?
Yeah.
And, you know, when a sixth of the record is the best song on the record, like, there's something to be said about that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So, yeah, when you weighed it and stuff, is like, and Tender's really the only song that I wasn't, like, super feeling. And so of an hour-long album, 4.5 minutes is the only part where I'm like, eh. Then, you know you're in for a good album. If there's only 4 minutes of the entire album that you're kind of like, eh, I could take or leave this. So,
and to sort of follow up a little bit on something we were talking about probably two albums ago or however many albums ago, since we kept referencing this record a good bit, like they're definitely building a concept here because, and you know, we talked about how the scribe and whatever, but like in the video game, which, you know, is he's trying to bring fully to fruition. But I think the biggest tell is on their social media, in their bio, the first line is "A story begins."
Oh yeah, yeah, it definitely feels so, like.
And then it's signed "The Scribe." So like, I look at it like this is probably going to be a multi-record effort.
Yeah,
to tell this story, and I would love to talk to one of those. Maybe we'll try to reach out. You know, we don't have a lot of clout, but maybe we'll try to reach out and see if we can get one of them. It's funny because like I've seen artists, you know, Pliny and even Daniel Tompkins, like, do podcasts that have less listeners and less followers than us. So, like, it must just be like getting a hold of them at the right time. So we'll have to just try.
I watch Jay on Twitch play drums every once in a while. So I could just hit him up in his chat and be like, hey, so we do a podcast. You guys want to talk about...
Or even just him. Just give us one. We don't need all of them. Just give us one.
Yeah. That would be cool. We could get any member of from Tesseract on.
Yeah, that would be podcast. Cool. We should give it a try, but
shoot your shot.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a list of artists that I'm going to shoot my shot at. We've been in contact with a couple. One big artist who has over 100,000 followers and monthly listeners and all that stuff that said they're going to do our podcast. We just have to like figure out the logistics around it. But
yeah,
this
would be like a bucket list item to like interview Tesseract would be sweet. Yeah.
But there's some other bands and artists that I'm going to reach out to as well, just to, you know, cast a wide net and see what we catch. But to wrap this up a little bit, I want to rank these records because that's I'm just gonna do it. You don't have to, but Altered State is the obvious best record for me.
I agree with that.
And then I would put One second. I would put War of Being third, Sonder fourth, and Polaris fifth.
I think my ranking would be probably the same, with the exception of I probably put War of Being over One. And that's honestly probably just because it's like a more modern production value, but they have like similar sounds. So like, if they did like a remaster of One, I would probably put One over top of War of Being. But I think just the nature of like, it's more of One's sound, but with a modern production, I think it edges out for me a little bit there. But Altered State still being my numero uno.
It's probably also that like you didn't discover One until now, I guess, right?
Yeah, that's definitely also probably part of it. I don't have the like nostalgia factor that like, you know, tugs at your heartstrings and
right. Yeah, no, I think that's a fair ranking. War of Being is definitely a really strong record. I think it's one that is going to grow on me even more than it already has too. So I'm real interested to see whenever I kind of sit down and start going through coming up with sort of my end of year list where this one's going to end up, because there's a chance that this is album of the year for me. Sleep Token obviously put out a very, very strong contender as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I don't know if this
Zenith
one will...
Passage.
Yeah. The Zenith Passage is one that I've been jamming a lot to.
Obviously Periphery dropped a record this year.
That's right. That was this year. This year's felt so long.
Yeah.
There's been so many album releases though. Like, it's a good year for music for sure.
Yeah, we're gonna have a record from Unprocessed at some point, and everything that I've heard from them thus far has been incredible.
Yeah, that one's gonna be
Currents released a record, and Invent Animate released a record, Haken released a record, August Burns Red released a record.
Oh, that August Burns Red one was this year too. Damn, this year has been this is long. It feels like it was like 2 years ago that they put out that album.
There's just so much good music. So many. This is like, I think when it boils down to it, like how we did sort of like 2021 versus 2022, like which year had the better releases or whatever. This is gonna be a big one, I think, like this year when we look back on it. So. This was fun. I was really happy that we did this, and I was really pumped to kind of go back and like re-listen to One again, mostly, but also just their discography in general. I did forget how much I liked Polaris as well.
I've honestly, like, outside of Altered State and obviously War of Being that just came out, the rest of the albums, like, I mean, I've listened to the majority of the tracks on Sonder, just like stuff that came on shuffle after Altered State finished. But my gap in other albums, I like I got to fill it in with kind of doing my homework for this episode, and it was fun to listen to, and Polaris is really solid. So even though we both said it's at the lowest ranking, it's still, you know, probably like B plus tier album. And
I think it just goes to show how strong their discography is. You know, obviously you have to, it's not going to be for everyone just because their sound isn't for everyone. Like Daniel Tompkins' vocal sound, or just like sort of the, some people just don't like clean vocals in general. And whenever there are clean vocals, people are very particular about them when it comes to metal. So there are people that just won't like Tesseract, and that's fine if that's you, but likely you aren't listening to me right now. you know, you saw Tesseract and just didn't even click on this, but if you do like clean vocals, obviously Daniel Tompkins is such a force in progressive metal. You know, he has so many features on other bands' stuff, and you know, he's all over the place. And that Sky Harbor record that he released in between One and Polaris, Guiding Lights, that record is incredible. So
yeah, he just, like, whatever he does, he, like, whatever he gets his hands on is good. So
yeah,
like, 100%. Even that was it White Moth Black Butterfly?
Yeah, White Moth, right? Black Butterfly. Yeah, that project is pretty cool too. You have to, I mean, it's not for everybody because it's, there is no metal aspect to that at all.
Yeah, yeah. It's not like something that we would go in depth on this podcast, but I've heard a few of his things because I've watched him on Twitch quite a bit, and he was doing some writing for that stuff. And I really liked what I heard, despite it not being, you know, the type of thing that we would talk about on this podcast. But, yeah, you know, if you're enjoy other genres of music as well, I recommend checking it out. Like, Daniel Tompkins is just a...
If you aren't close-minded.
Yeah.
But Dan's there's a song... firing
shots over here.
There's a song by them called The Cost of Dreaming by White Moth Black Butterfly, and I love that song. It's very good. I actually used it as, like, I created, like, a video montage for, like... My wife and I went on, like, an anniversary trip, and, like...
That song is cool. A lot of
hiking and stuff. And yeah, I used it in like a video montage. The song is cool. The vocals are cool. I love female vocals too. And I forget the name of the vocalist that is in this project with him. I wish I remembered, but
I think his, like, his vocals too, like layered in with a female vocalist, it's like a cool, it's a good duo, I think.
Yeah, agreed. I'm not going to find the name in time, so just look it up yourselves. But yeah, it's a very cool project. Again, you have to like sort of like poppy or synthier sort of music. It's more like in the indie pop vein than it is anything else. But yeah, Daniel Tompkins is in it, so it's cool.
Yeah, so if you are a fan of Daniel Tompkins or Tesseract, it's worth checking out just to see his side projects.
His features on the couple Earthside songs that he's been on too are,
those
really
are
cool
good too.
So definitely check that out as well if you haven't. But anyways, this was fun.
It was fun.
Let us know kind of what you guys thought of this episode. Let us know what your favorite Tesseract record is. If it's not Altered State, you're wrong. And
shots fired again.
And yeah, I think our next episode, which again, hopefully won't be as long as the gap between the last episode and the episode before that one. But I think we're going to go back to Hidden Gems, talk about some bands that we think are underrated. We always like to do that too. So
yeah,
since we're coming back, you know, might as well do the episodes we enjoy doing. And
I mean, we were on a long run of interview stuff, so it'll be nice to like kind of get back to our usual format and do some of those episodes again, since it's been a while.
For sure. For sure. And still want to get more interview stuff out there as well. So
yeah, as absolutely.
We said, we've been casting a net, we've gotten some bites, but nothing scheduled yet. So once we have something scheduled, we'll start teasing a little bit to just to get people guessing as to who it might be. But
yeah, we'll do a cryptic, One of those like augmented, or what are they called? The ARGs,
like
the cryptic guessing things on Insta.
I like it because we have all kinds of time to do stuff.
Yeah.
we're going to do something though. We'll come up with something.
Yeah. I was joking about the ARG.
I know.
It would be cool to do, but.
But yeah, until then, thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. We really appreciate it. We appreciate your patience with us during our little hiatus, but we're back. We're hopefully going to be back here a little more, definitely more consistent than we were. So
yeah,
it's good to be back. Good to be doing episodes that we love. And until the next one, we'll catch you later. Thank you so much.
Thanks.